Hello, it is May 11th, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 562 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports Center Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and thank you for spending part of your day with me. I'm hoping to get us an extra couple of podcasts, non-Footer and Leach edition, in the next couple of weeks. Some fun, exciting stuff happening. But right now, we got to talk to Allison. It's back for our weekly podcast. We're a couple days late, but we're back to normal. This is the day after the Bryce Harper business. Bryce Harper causing a national crisis in our baseball confidence once again. So I'm going to talk to Allison about that and all sorts of other things. So as always, please make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a nice review. And that's it. So here's me and Allison. All right, Allison, how's it going? Are you, I don't want to interrupt you. You may be in the middle of being screamed at by Bryce Harper right now, and I want not to stand in your way. I'm curious. You saw that. I wrote a piece for Sports on Earth about this. We'll get into my piece in a moment. But I'm curious, what did you think of the whole Bryce Harper yelling at the ump business?
Well, I read your column before I really scrutinized the video, so I sort of did it backwards. Where I got your, you know, I was able to be biased and kind of adopt your take before I actually just
good. Good. Had take I encourage everyone to do that.
Right. So I agree with you on, like, I love his ability to be wrong, like, on every single thing that he was mad about and not care and just continue to be mad, his emotions, his passion.
Let me describe my take just to make sure everybody knows it, in case they have not done what I would like them to do, which is always to make sure to read everything that you find on Will Leach, the willleachexperience.com, not an actual site. Anyway, so basically my argument is the funny thing about Harper in this situation was he was wrong about everything. That he was actually wrong about everything. And I don't mean morally wrong, like, I can't believe he yelled at the ump that way. How could he do that? I mean, he was literally factually wrong. Both the pitches he was angry about were strikes. They were called strikes. He was angry that they were called strikes, but clearly they were strikes when you look at the replay. And then in the dugout, he was the one yelling. There's a great moment in the video where you see Dusty Baker, who, like all managers know, you need to not have your best player thrown out from the dugout. You always want to make somebody else take the blame on that. Tries to pull Harper back. Now, it's possible the umpire may have had a quick trigger finger a little bit, but certainly what happens next is what more matters to my point, which is that Harper responded by saying, "What? I wasn't yelling. What are you, crazy?" And then once the Nationals win the game, he runs back out and starts cursing at the umpire again. Now, the point of my piece was not so much we should be mad at Bryce Harper, because I don't, like, you know, he's Bryce Harper. I think if we're gonna get mad about him showing a lot of emotion, we're going to be mad for a very long time, because this is kind of who Bryce Harper is, and we can certainly debate that. But to me, I just found it amazing, and I think speaks to the job the umpires have to deal with, that at every point, Brian Knight, who is the name of the umpire, and I think a new kid on the block. I think there was a Brian Knight in there at one point, or one of the Brian, maybe Jonathan right. or Jordan or one of them. Jordan's brother, Brian. I thought he handled himself very well. He made the correct call. He didn't escalate. Maybe he had a quick trigger finger on Harper. We could debate that. But generally speaking, he didn't escalate the situation. He got the calls right, and it didn't matter because Harper was mad. And I think that that tells you a little bit about Harper and the job of umpiring, and the idea that Harper was not only was wrong about everything, but it didn't matter, which is, I think, says something specific about Harper and, frankly, something generally about our culture at large. I think you can make an argument that it doesn't really matter if you're right. It just matters if you believe that you are right and you are emphatic in your belief that you're right. And I think we saw that with the Harper, Jordan, Jonathan, Brian Knight situation.
Yeah, first of all, actually, he was not a new kid. It was Jonathan Knight and Jordan Knight. But you might be thinking of Brian McKnight, who was a regular on 90210 as a guest singer.
Yeah, I assume that that's probably it.
Yeah, so, I'm glad we cleared that up, because that was important. So, I don't mind that Bryce Harper is who he is. I mean, just like you say, and I don't mind that he is emotional, and I'm not really getting mad at him for anything. I think that he's just this, like, polarizing figure, as we say, and it's hilarious because I don't even know why he is. He wants to make baseball fun again, and he wants to, I don't know, you keep hearing about these incredibly nice things that he does off the field, and that he's very gracious to people.
In a lot of ways, so are all of, like, listen, there are people that have have said Alex Rodriguez is a great guy off the field. Like, I don't know that. So, like, I feel like a lot of times, hey, he's a great guy off the field. He signs balls for kids. He helps old ladies across the street. A lot of times I'm like, that's fine. But, I mean, I do that too. But no one says, boy, that was a terrible column, Will. But, hey, you helped a whole lady across the street. Like,
well,
we're talking
no.
about the field.
But the point is, like, that Dave Kingman hit a lot of home runs, and he was also a horrible person.
That's
like,
a good point. That's
tremendously
good point.
Bad person
That's
off the
point.
Field.
That's a fair point.
And so there are people like that. And so you do, when you do see that he's actually a nice guy, I do think that counts for something. Because there's, I mean, Brett Myers is just, I mean, he's just a despicable human being.
Right.└
So the fact that, you know, he wasn't really good on the field, like, toward the end of his career, I mean, it doesn't vilify him. But the fact that he's just a bad person.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, bad person. Okay. So I think that Bryce Harper is a good person. I think that matters. I think that he just went too far by when he said the magic words to the umpire. It was after the game, right? So they were like jumping up and down. And
well, technically he was supposed to be in the clubhouse, but it just happened two pitches after he was ejected. So
yeah.
he was able to run back out. He took it too far with that.
And I think that that was unnecessary. And you have to, at some point, you're going to have to get your emotions in check. And that's why I was so bothered by Sean Rodriguez last year at the wild card game, when he started beating the crap out of that water cooler after the issue, the, you know, when the bench was cleared and the Cubs and the Pirates were jawing at each other, and he just totally lost it. And I get it, because he was so frustrated because they were about to lose that game and they were going to get bounced again before being able to actually get into the playoffs. But it just was so, like, you have to be bigger than that. You've got to be better than that. And I just felt like Bryce Harper, okay, dude, like, at some point it needs to then, once you scream and you yell, it's supposed to sort of be out of your system. And for him to keep going like that just kind of shows, I don't know, immaturity on his side. That's the only part of it that really bothered me through the whole thing.
See, which is funny, because I honestly feel like the exact opposite. Actually, that didn't bother me very much. Like, it's like, yeah, you'd like him to be able to settle down a little bit, but that's very easy for me to say. I'm sitting at a desk typing. A lot of these guys are, like, their adrenaline gets going in the game. It doesn't make it okay so much as I understand it. The thing that's frustrating to me is that the thing that he was so mad about, he was just wrong. Like, those pitches were strikes,
right.
And he was the one that was yelling. And like, to me, you know, it reminded me a little bit, you know, a lot of times you'll hear announcers when they're broadcasting a game and they'll say, oh, well, he's fired up now, but when he sees the replay on that, he'll realize that he was in the wrong. But I don't think that's the way it works anymore. I think that now, like, if you feel like you are right, listen, our entire culture is going this direction. The idea, like, you know, there have been social scientists that have done studies that say if someone firmly believes something, if you show them irrefutable, contradictory evidence, it not only does not sway their mind, it actually makes them more entrenched.
And oh, makes, for sure. They get fatter,
yeah,
for
exactly.
sure.
And it makes them more secure in their beliefs. And I feel like that is what's happening. That is, I think, clearly what happened with Harper last night. There was not a time, if he went back and watched, I guarantee you, if he went back and watched and saw that the Nationals K-Zone thing, which, listen, I have my own issues with the K-Zone camera. I'm not trying to say it's infallible. But if he goes back and watches that, what he's going to say is not, oh, turns out it was a strike. I shouldn't have been upset, so upset. He'll say, no, that K-Zone camera screwed up. Or that umpire was squeezing me anyway, or it was, or the call before that was off, or the call near that was close. Like, it feels like the notion of having to admit that maybe you overreacted or were wrong. Like, listen, Harper may apologize, maybe, though he didn't seem very apologetic after the game. But if he is apologizing, he'll be apologizing because he doesn't want any more trouble and he wants to move on, not because he actually thinks he was wrong, not only in the way he reacted to it, but whether he was actually wrong to be upset in the first place. Like the Rodriguez thing. Let's look at the Rodriguez thing. Rodriguez was bad because he was losing, and it was very frustrating. You'd like to, of course, everyone would like to say, hey, settle down, man. It's you know, it's frustrating, obviously. And listen, if he'd have done that in the clubhouse, no one would have cared, because no one would have seen it.
Right.
But I, at least the thing that he was upset about actually happened. They
right.
did lose. Like, they did lose, and it is very frustrating. Where Harper has just built up, and not just Harper, I don't mean to single out Harper on this, but people just build up in their minds that I am right, and all contradictory evidence is incorrect. And now the fact that you're trying to tell me that I'm wrong is just making me even more angry. And of course, it leads to this moment where he loses his mind and starts yelling at the umpire, which again, we all watched it today and like, man, what did that umpire do to make him so mad? Nothing. The umpire did nothing. The umpire did everything right from start to finish. And to me, that is, it felt like a reflection of the way the general conversation in America is right now. And I mean that not in like any specific notion, but listen, you've been online and listen, you know, we've discussed before how different it is, frankly, for a woman in sports to talk about this stuff online. But when is the last time that you had a conversation with someone in online or maybe in person? You and I are both very nice, friendly people who are able to persuade each other. So we are not the best examples. But generally speaking, you've gotten to argue with someone online. And at the end of it, they'll be like, wow, I think about this differently now. I had not considered that before. Thank you for your input. And that's frustrating for me. That never happens. And that's frustrating for me sometimes and for you, I'm sure, because part of our job is to be persuasive or to describe what's going on. And the idea that that now is off the table and it's just everyone in their corners yelling at each other, it's discouraging.
Well, it's first of all, it is 100% human nature to become more angry when you realize that you're wrong. I mean, there's very rare times where you're going to see somebody actually admit it and then become calm after that. I mean, that just makes them, when you're in that moment. And by the way, I do say, like, I didn't see it that way. Thank you so much for enlightening me. I say that as sometimes I say that as a response on Twitter as a very sarcastic person.
Right.
So, yeah, and that. Yeah, I probably shouldn't do that, but sometimes it's just too irresistible, and then that, I cannot even imagine like how annoying that is for the person receiving that. Which is,
listen, I can't imagine how annoying.
Kind of kind of my intention.
I doubt someone comes to you and I doubt you have that reaction to people who are being in a friendly way coming to you in good faith, saying, "Actually, you know, Allison, that's a good point. Here was an idea that I had." It comes to you cordially and in a hey, fellow human, let's have a nice discussion. You're sarcastic to people because they were just an asshole to you.
Right, exactly. And I mean, well, I just got into it the other day, like on Twitter, because of the hill in center field at Minute Maid Park, which I hate. And I've hated it since day one. And we've talked about it. And I will not sway on my feelings. I don't think that someone actually needs to get hurt first in order for it to be stupid and dangerous, which is how I describe it. I also don't think that we need to wait around for someone to be killed in the stands with a foul ball before they finally do something about the netting. But that is what we're waiting
for. Some places are. A few states.
Right. Yeah. Kansas City, I believe,
St. Louis has changed theirs as well. Atlanta
extended it across the entire dugout.
No. They haven't gone as far as they should, but they've gone farther.
No, they've gone to the end of the dugout.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that does nothing for me, but whatever. We can talk about that another day.
Yes.
The point being that, so people just disagree with me and I don't care. Like, they're entitled to their opinion, but I'm not going to change my opinion. And I get a little bit angry that they don't see it my way, but you know, it's Twitter. And so you're not like having a face-to-face conversation and your facial expressions can't be seen. And you can't have, you know, when you see someone and you sort of, they're likable. And so you soften yourself a little bit. I mean, none of that is happening. And that's the world we live in, but I don't know what that has to do with Bryce Harper, except that
here's what it has to do here. I'm going to take us home on this one. The national conference is here's my theory is the national conversation about really anything. Has basically taken that's what Harper and umpires are. in that umpires, like you, umpires are faceless. That's umpires are, when I wrote the piece, I peppered throughout it all these famous quotes about the job of umpiring and how it's thankless and everybody hates you. And it has the great Ron Luciano, the late Ron Luciano quote, saying that, like, here's the exact quote. The exact quote is, "Umpiring is best described as the profession of standing between 2 7-year-olds with one ice cream cone."
Exactly.
Which sounds like, to me, it sounds exactly what being an umpire is. And so that's the thing is, I feel like our national conversation is reflecting that now, in that you can make an umpire. The umpire is not a person. The umpire is not someone else like you walking around the world with a life and a family and fears and hopes and dreams. They are just that jerk with the ice cream cone.
Right.
And I feel like that's how Harper saw him last night. And I feel like in a lot of our general conversations, that is how we see the person on the other side.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know what it says about – I don't know what it says at all, but it is that – way. I feel for the umpires. I also am able to sit in, you know, the cushy press boxes and watch the replays and realize that the umpires are right most of the time, not necessarily on the calls that are challenged that can be replayed, but the balls and strikes, they've got a pretty good track record. They do put themselves in this position But I think that, I think we also need to understand that often when we see the arguments and the anger and just the absolute like fury that some of these people feel as they are yelling at these umpires, that there's an understanding, and it maybe isn't as bad as we think. I just think about some of the managers that have now retired who had, I mean, Bobby Cox got thrown out more than any other manager in the history of baseball and would really get into it with a lot of umpires, and also was friends with a lot of them off the field, financially helped a lot of them that fell onto hard times, some of the ones that he screamed at the loudest, and it was so different off the field. And there is a respect, and the teams, the players are encouraged. Please know the names of these guys. There's a big poster in the clubhouse, every clubhouse, with the headshots of every umpire. And they want the guys to know the names. And there really is an understanding and a respect. And that's why it bothers me when I think that, Bryce Harper kind of he took it a little bit too far. But if you look at, like, George Brett, I mean, his pine tar game, stuff like that. I mean, that stuff happened a lot back then. And I don't think that anybody's emotionally scarred from it. The things that people are emotionally, the umpires are emotionally scarred from, are like Jim Joyce when he screwed up that perfect game. I mean, that'll be for the rest of his life, will haunt him. But it really, I don't think it has anything to do with like the one-on-one confrontations, just general things that go on from game to game.
Yeah. And anyway, and we'll close on this, because I feel like this is another thing I've almost kind of missed. Like, we don't have as many arguments as we used to because we have replay. Like, the idea of a manager coming out, the manager coming out and kicking dirt and stomping his feet and getting mad and so on, has been replaced by the guy taking one step out of the dugout, looking into the dugout, having somebody watch the video, and then waving and then waving to see whether or not we're going to have the replay or not. Which, I will say, one of the things that was a constant criticism of managers going out to argue with umpires, A, it never changed anything, and B, it wasted time. Right. Well, certainly I don't know. I don't know of any less time. This is really the trade-off. Is, yes, they never changed any calls, at least that I can ever remember. On the other hand, it was a lot more entertaining than us sitting and twiddling our thumbs as Mike Matheny looks up to the dugout, into the dugout, and says, "Should we call this replay or not?" And by the way, last thing on this, on replay. You and I, last time we talked, we were in the Chelsea Markets office of MLB Advanced Media for MLB Plus, which I will be doing again this week on Thursday night, Royals Yankees. And one of the things I saw there, and I'm assuming people that work in the office all the time see this all the time, I saw one of the replay officials, like, coming out of the bathroom, and the games were about to start, and there was like a little part of me that, like, I realized this is, because I always wonder. Is the reason some of these plays are being delayed is because they have to go to the bathroom. Like, I think about this all the time. Like, because, I mean, they got to go sometime, right? Like, because there's not that many. I don't know if you've ever been in that room. I've been in that room, not during an actual game, like, just to, like, they gave, like, a tour of it. So I've been in that room. It's not that big. There's not that many people in it. And you have to be ready at all times. It's not like they're constantly shifting and people shifting out, which made me wonder, are they really, like, is this his last pee? For 4 hours? Is this the last time he's going to do this? So I'm going to get to the bottom of this the next time I am there and find out just what the bathroom schedules are like for the replays officials in New York, because something is slowing him down. And if it's just a bathroom, I mean, maybe it's a catheter. Like, maybe it's something as simple as a Gatorade bottle or a.
Say, you could treat it like the road trips, like, yeah, when exactly. Guys are on road trips, right?
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. Or a bedpan, depending on who is in there, like whatever it takes to make that. I was at a game. And listen, we've discussed replay many, many times in this podcast, but it was just funny to see, like, because they're in uniform. Like they're actually in full on replay umpire uniform. They weren't wearing a mask. That would have been great. But I was certainly very impressed that I was like, okay, I'm getting out of your way. This may be the last time you get to pee.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. When I was there last weekend and I was trying to find my way to our little conference room for our meeting, and you just get completely lost at Chelsea.
Of course.
I can't even
very confusing.
The maze that place is. So there's like five floors but I did see, like, I walked by the replay room, just like it's this big sign outside that says like replay something. Yeah. And I felt like I was 9 years old,
right.
In a church, like sneaking around somewhere I'm not supposed to be. And I so wanted to poke my head in there, but I did not.
Yeah, it was, it's funny because, a lot of times they're umpires think that's part of the deal. It's like they have a rotating crew in there. So, but it's just, it always makes me It always amuses me. So, okay, last thing I want to talk about. We have to talk about the Cubs at some point. I'm hoping they'll just lose five this week, so we won't have to talk about them next week. But they are off to one of the best starts in Major League Baseball history. But we'll get to them in just a moment, because I want to talk to the. We'll get to them next week. We'll talk about the Cubs next week, I promise. Hopefully, this is the jinx to make them lose seven in a row. But I do want to talk about Mike Trout, and specifically the Angels. The Angels appear to be falling apart. They've lost their top two starters. They already did not have a great pitching staff. Their offense was already really struggling. They are now essentially Mike Trout and a very expensive Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton. Pujols is only barely doing better for the Angels than Josh Hamilton is, which is particularly galling because, of course, Josh Hamilton is playing for the Rangers or not playing for the Rangers. So this brought up this idea. Brian Kinney lambasted the idea on Sports on Earth, but Jim Duquette made an argument on MLB.com about whether this would happen. Five teams that could trade for Mike Trout. Now here, regardless of which teams we're talking about, and again, I'm ignoring this because the first one is the Cubs, which was floated by my friend Joe Sheehan, I think 3 years ago, about how two or 3 years ago, about how the Angels should consider trading Trout. The argument, Kenny's argument against trading Trout, which is a reasonable one, which is he's Mike Trout. He's right. Mike Trout. And you're already starting at one point higher than everybody else in baseball, or almost everybody else in baseball, because you have Mike Trout. Totally reasonable point. On the other hand, it's Mike Trout and nobody else. The Angels have a bad team now. They're without their top two starters. They have no farm system. It does feel like if there were a time to make a Herschel Walker-esque trade, now is the time to do it, because he's really relatively cheap. He signed for as good as he is. He signed for 5 years. I mean, he's expensive, but but compared for what he gets, he's cheap. Do you think the Angels should at least consider it or not?
Of course they should consider it, but there's so many things that have to go right. First of all, he has a full no trade clause.
Right.
I mean, to consider it, yes. The short answer is yes, but this would be almost impossible to carry out, because he's got the no trade clause, because he's making a ton of money. You have to get a return without. So if you get Mike Trout and you're giving away the players who are making you really good anyway, then that is completely pointless. So you are inflating your payroll, and then you're trading away the best of what your organization has, and probably at a much lower rate than what Mike Trout costs, probably pitching involved, which is really hard to give up. And then you have to take on all that salary, and he gets to decide if he wants to go there or not. And so there's so many moving parts to that. But at the same time, yeah, when you look at the organization, and I 100% blame this on Artie Moreno, and I always will, because this is what happens when ownership involves themselves in roster decisions. So these things happen. Albert Pujols gets signed, CJ Wilson gets signed, on and on and on and on. And I don't know when these guys are going to just stop doing it. But okay, so it is what it is.
Listen, billionaires do not become billionaires by being hands off.
It's like they can't. If you could just get an owner who would understand what significance they hold, and that is to pick up the phone and say, "Here's what you can spend on payroll. Have a nice day, Mr. General Manager," and then stay out of it and don't be heard from for months. Your team will win the World Series, but okay. So, yes, they have a terrible farm system. They have bloated payroll. They have old players, and now their young players that are good are hurt, and there is no hope. So I don't know what you do, but you can't identify Mike Trout as the getting rid of him and his salary as being able to replenish your system, because really, even if you – I mean, you'd have to get major league players back.
Well, here's the argument, and here, Duquette brings up five teams, and – a couple of them, one of them I don't, he brings up the Mets. I don't think the Mets would be quite enough. He brings up the Rangers. I'm not sure they would have enough unless you're really sold on Jerks or Profar. The Dodgers, I don't think they would do that because, I mean, they're the Dodgers, and the Anaheim has been trying to chase them for 3 years. But the two teams he brings up, one of them makes a little bit of sense, which is the Red Sox. But to me, here's the trade, and we're back to the Cubs again. Here's the trade. Talk about being Major League Baseball, but Major League quality players back. If you can get Kyle Schwarber, ooh, yeah, Javier Baez, and Jorge Soler. Three that's, Major League Baseball-ready players.
That's right. Not enough.
That's not enough? If I'm the Angels, I would make that deal. I don't know if the Cubs would offer that deal. I don't know if they would offer that deal. But like, that's your outfield or your two outfielders in the DH, cost controlled. And that maybe that's why the Cubs would not give up that much. But you're talking about Mike Trout, and like, Mike Trout is the best player in the game. I would have to think Schwarber, Baez, and Soler, all three of which are power hitting prospects. Maybe they got to throw in a potential prospect pitcher. But if
I mean, you have to get a pitcher. You have to get pitching back. That's what they need.
They need everything is the problem. Right. and the problem is the reason that the idea of trading Trout has come up, because I like Brian Kane's piece, but it was a little disingenuous. He was like, "Why you trade the best player? Who would do that?" Well, lots of teams would do that because lots of teams have done that, because that's the way that, I know we don't say the word tanking here. We say the word tanking. Say it. Tank. But but certainly the reason that the Braves, the Phillies, the Reds, the Brewers, the Padres, and the Rockies, to a lesser extent, are all kind of crapping out right now is not because they don't like winning or they're just dumb to trade their best players. It's because they've seen the Cubs, and it used to be the Astros, to a lesser extent the Astros, but they've seen it succeed. The idea of bottoming out, if you're not going to win a championship, bottom out and get rid of everything that's worth trading so you can reconstruct from the bottom up. So lots of teams are doing this exact strategy. So it's not unheard of that the Angels, who even with Mike Trout are not contending for a West title this year, and frankly not looking like they're going to tend one for a while, it almost like it feels like you have to at least consider it. And to me, that it would require something like that. And you're right. The problem is, yeah, they need pitching, but they need more than anything young, cost-controlled players. And this would give them three of them major league ready right now that are still young enough they'll have them for like the next 6 years. They will have these guys longer than they currently have Trout, and for cheaper the entire time. I'd have to think they would have to at least consider it.
I guess. I mean, especially if they don't think that they're going to be competitive through the duration of Trout's contract.
Which I don't think they will be.
He's only signed through 2020.
Yeah, I think it's let me look that up.
I think I read this morning it's 2020. So that's not that far away.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at 4 years from now. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to consider it. I would hope that the Angels kind of new management would be able to do the right thing. I just don't trust that the owner, I mean, I don't think that they could pull this off and not totally screw it up, to be honest with you, because of the owner.
Remember,
that's just my opinion.
If he had not signed that extension with him, which at the time they were like, wow, they're barely committing a lot to, they thought it was, they, people generally thought it was a good deal for the Angels because they were getting the idea that Trout was going to just fall off the table was not true. But if he had not, if he were doing what Harper's doing and just letting his contract run out, he would be a free agent after next year. Can you imagine if Mike Trout at the age of 25, because he's going to be making $34 million in 2018, 2019, and 2020. There is no way he would have not made a lot more than that in those first 3 years, and then probably 7 years beyond that.
Maybe he'll want to be traded.
Maybe, or he can just wait. Like, you know, I mean, the fact is, I mean, if they're terrible, he might have to consider it. Or, you know, he can wait till 2020, again, which is not that long of amount of time, and he'll only be 28. So, I don't know, man. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So, it's just very bizarre to see the best player in baseball. And I think he probably still is the best player in baseball. I say still as if he's not 24. I mean, he's 24 years old. It's not like he's fading. The guy that's still the best player in baseball, and his team, to me, looks like, even with him, one of the worst teams in baseball. It's a good, it's another reason baseball's awesome. You can't just Steph Curry this stuff.
No, I mean, I agree. I just don't think that, I don't know. I don't, when it comes to the Angels, I guess I just don't feel like, okay, when I look at the Reds, it's like the Joey Votto contract was absurd. They cannot, in that market, handle that contract. Right. They cannot have a competitive team and have Joey Votto's contract being paid at the same time. Brandon Phillips adds to the problem, but he'll at least be off the books in a couple of years. When I look at the Angels, I don't look at like, oh, well, how much can they really do when they've got Mike Trout's salary? I mean, I just feel like there's so many other things that they could have been doing that they haven't been doing. And I guess they have to draft better, develop better, scout better. I think you start there. I mean, you don't have the worst farm system in baseball without really good reasons. Having been around the worst farm system in baseball for like 3 or 4 years running here in Houston, there's a lot of things that have to get messed up, and you have to actually have a lot of people screwing it up. And so I sort of feel like they could get better at that and not have a complete disaster on their hands for the next decade and still be able to have Mike Trout playing for them. that's just, you know.
They're doomed. It's just crazy to think that
Yeah,
the
another
Mets.
doom for a while. I picked them to finish last in the division, but having no idea that they were just going to get hit with
Yeah.
these injuries
And to
as
be fair, and again, that's the worst part about this though, is that they were already a little below average team, and now their best two pitchers are gone, and the pitchers were pitching us not great anyway. It looks like, and now Angelton Simmons is hurt. They just, yuck, yuck. All right. Well, next week we'll talk about the Cubs. I vow to you, Allison Futter, and to you, listener, that we will talk about the Cubs, who, as it turns out, have a chance, are on pace for the best record in baseball history. So,
Yo, I think they're doing it. I was just around them for like two straight series.
oh, and they're so fun. They're
They're
so
like,
fun. They're
I'm
so wacky. You're
so on that
so you
bandwagon.
drank the Kool-Aid. You drank the Kool-Aid.
That thud you heard was me jumping on the bandwagon.
I mean, they're 24-6. That's a pretty good, pretty solid piece of anti-leech evidence in that
I'm
regard.
totally like I'm the absolute person that you want to hate because like I'm totally charmed by Joe Maddon just being around him for a few days
And I
off.
am too. And listen, I am too. No, I'm the worst
My
person on this
God.
because listen, if I were not a Cardinals fan, I would find this Cub team so likable and so fun, but I don't because they're the Cubs. And I recognize, as long as I'm upfront about that, I should be upfront. But the mime thing, you still think the mime thing was a bit much.
The what?
The mime thing was a bit
Oh
much.
yeah, no, those I tried to kind of block that stuff out because yeah, I mean all that stuff is a little much for me. But for some
Whatever. They're so fun. They're so
But when
wacky.
I stand at Addison Russell's locker at post game, that he was being interviewed, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, you're 12. You're 12.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the kid he's a baby. I mean, he's not, he's a grown man, but he looks so young. I don't know. I like this team.
I do too, damn it. And they're already nine freaking games up on the Cardinals, so yikes. And it's May 10th.
Chris Bryant is so nice. Oh my God. So nice.
I'm sure. Listen, I find them. I find them. I find this Cubs team. Honestly, there's really not a player other than Lackey, who was just a Cardinal, and I liked him then. There really isn't anyone on the team I particularly dislike, which is disorienting and frustrating.
They're absolutely getting this all-time win record. Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
100%.
okay. I'm not sure about that yet, but they're certainly on pace for it. They're certainly awesome right now, and I think
They made the Pirates look ridiculously
they made
stupid.
the Nationals look ridiculous. Yeah, so
Yes.
I started to feel proud that the Cardinals got one out of three at home against them. So yeah, that's how the Cubs are right now.
Yes.
All right, Allison, we'll do this again next week. We will talk more about the Cubs, I promise. Next week, but I'm glad to get this together, and I'll see you. We'll set up, and then by next week, I'm sure both of our teams will be back on the right path, as opposed to everything falling apart as it is now.
Yeah, the Astros are already on the right path, my
Oh, well,
friend.
the Cardinals are back to 500. All right. Take care, Allison. We'll chat next week.
Okay.
As always, thank you to Allison Futter, national correspondent for MLB.com. Please follow her on Twitter at @AlysonFootter. This is a Will Leach Experience podcast, Footer and Leach edition. Please, music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back next week to talk Cubs. All right. Be safe.